Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You have my sword.
And you have my bow.
And my trowel.
Hi, you're listening to episode 15 of And My Trowel, where we look at the fantastic side of archaeology and the archaeological side of fantasy. My name's Tilly.
And I'm Ash.
And today we're going to be talking about one of the most classic fantasy objects.
Ooh, seeing stones. Flying carpets?
Not quite.
Ancient tomes?
Okay, all right, so fine. Maybe it's not exactly a classic fantasy object, but they do feature in a lot of fantasy fiction. And most importantly, if you want a clue, they don't feature in our podcast intro.
Oh, you mean axes.
Exactly. And, well, as luck would have it, I've just seen someone walking along the street outside who might be able to help. Hang on a second. Amber!
Hey!
Oh, so, what a convenience to have you walking along the street outside our office. So this is Dr. Amber Roy, who just so happens to be a professional archaeologist currently specialising in axes.
Ah, amazing. Welcome. And thanks so much for joining us. It's so fortuitous.
Who knew? So, Amber, welcome to the podcast. Perhaps you'd like to say a little about yourself. What exactly is your specialism in terms of axes, and how did you get into doing axes?
Well, I mean, I would describe myself as an experimental archaeologist and useware analyst, mm-hmm. and I apply these methods to stones, but specifically stones with blades, and that means axes.
Stones with blades.
I have been researching axes for many years, and it's kind of, I don't know, I think this has been developing through my entire life. There's a fascination with stone and axes. I grew up in East Anglia, and flint is amazingly abundant there, so I was always trying to very poorly nap flint. That didn't really go very well. I think when I was a child, I used to just draw all over it instead of trying to shape it. And then when I actually went to university to study archaeology, I quickly transferred this attention to different kinds of stone axes and like coarse and ground stone. And the allure of Neolithic polished stone axes really captured my attention. Yeah, the rest is history. I just haven't been able to escape it.
I do find it funny that you say you've always had a fascination with axes. That does sound slightly morbid. Was there a particular, like, I don't know, spark point?
I mean, that's kind of hard. I suppose a trip to a museum in Bangor, where I studied for my undergraduate, and they had this entire wall full of polished axes. Mm-hmm. And that was probably the spark point.
Okay, thinking, so it was always like, it was always past axes. It wasn't that you were just like obsessed with axes in general and then...
Oh yeah, no, not that one, that modern one.
Yeah.
No, it's the stone. I mean, I'm really drawn to stone. And the more I research axes, the more I get obsessed with stone as well. So they come kind of hand in hand for me.
Oh, fair enough.
I mean, there is something really nice about finding an axe or like even just a worked like stone lithic or something. Mm. I remember finding them on site and being like, oh my God, they're so smooth and nice. Oh. And then on the other side, they're all dimpled. Ooh. You know, so they are quite nice. I get it.
Yeah.
So what are you working on now, Amber?
I'm currently in the middle of a postdoctoral research project, which is based in the Archaeology Research Lab at Stockholm University. And I'm doing a project entitled Battle Axe Technological Lifeways. Mm-hmm. And this project looks at axes, they're perforated axes. Some of them are incredibly beautiful, dating to the Middle Neolithic B in Sweden and various parts of Norway and Finland. And this period is known as the Battle Axe Culture. And my project looks at the lives of these objects, and I'm particularly interested in looking at how the stone itself influences the trajectories of these axes. So how does stone influence how they were made and how they were used, and then various different places they might end up? And ultimately also, I mean, axes are often, many different types of axes, but particularly battle axes, are often objects that are seen as purely ceremonial and non-functional, and they're seen as symbols of power. And because of this, it's often regarded that they can't be used at all. And my research is really trying to break down these kind of very stereotypical and sexist interpretations. Yes. So yeah, this is what I'm working on right now.
We love the breakdown of sexist interpretations.
What's the weirdest place? You said their life ways, so like where they end up, what they become. Do you have like a really weird one for an axe? Like, does it end up in a completely different place than you imagined, or like?
Well, maybe not. There are a small number from bogs, but that's not very many. There are some from burials, and most of them are stray finds. Many axes, won't be just for battle axes, but for many different types of prehistoric stone axes, they tend to be found by farmers, and not modern farmers, but when farming used very shallow ploughs, and people would walk behind the ploughs, that's when a lot of objects were found.
Oh.
And so a lot of these axes have been in museum collections for a really long time, and then I've looked at some where the only information about the axe just says, "Thank you for Farmer Ted for donating this to the museum."
Oh, Farmer Ted.
Yeah.
Your star, Farmer Ted.
Yeah.
It's always funny because, yeah,
so a lot of them, they could have really amazing context and be found in weird places, but we wouldn't know. Mm. I have heard of what happens to some axes after they've been found. So there have been some really big, in the early Bronze Age in Britain, you get really big perforated axes called axe hammers. They could be over 30-40 centimeters long, very big and heavy. And some farmers have found them, and then they've gone, "Oh, that makes a good doorstop," and put them on like a barn door. And others have found smaller perforated axes and hung them on string to ward off evil and things like that. So there's some odd, more modern uses where these axes end up.
And what would you say? So like, there's some sort of interesting bits and everything, but in terms of the research itself, I mean, if you say a lot of them are stray finds, is it better to have contextual information about them, or is it actually good not to have that information, if you know what I mean?
I mean, it's always great to have contextual information. It's wonderful to find and look at an object that was found in a grave and it had some flint blades with it, it had some pottery, you have the remains of a burial there, and then you have the possibility of doing a lot of different analysis. There's double burial from a place called Linköping in Sweden, which had a male and a female buried with a dog and then also a child and a series of different objects. And they managed to do ADNA on the skeletal remains and isotope analysis, and which shows that these people were actually connected to Yamnaya steppe herders and not the traditional hunter-gatherer communities that were already in Sweden, which is a really interesting element of battle axe culture people. Huh. So having an axe placed in a burial like that connects it amazingly to all this other information.
Mm.
So that's fantastic. And this is often why archaeologists often are drawn to looking at objects that are from burials and settlements and things like that. But we now have so many amazing methods that we can use to draw out elements of these objects' lives. So a lot of my research looks at stray finds, and I can say a lot about these objects because I can delve into what the traces on their surface tell me about how they were made and how they were used, and if they had, say, multiple users and various different elements of the lives of these artifacts. And that is amazing contextual information.
Yeah. Oh, you create your own context.
Yeah. Yeah, we are really lucky now that there are these methods that are available to us. And I think that with more developments in different scientific fields, archaeology will just keep drawing from these to find out more and more and more about the past.
Oh, cool.
This is very exciting. Exciting work. And what's your favourite bit about it?
Oh, I mean, that's very hard to pick. I I think my favorite part is that I can look at interpretations that are made based on form, and we have these wonderfully polished artifacts, and people can say, oh, they're not used. And I love to be able to say, hang on a minute.
Well, you're wrong.
That's obviously wrong. Yeah. So, and Useware is an amazing tool to be able to do that with.
And so is that like kind of the double other side of the axe? Lol. And like, it's the most frustrating thing as well, that people have these misconceptions about the objects.
Yeah, I get very frustrated really when I've published information about the function of battle axes and how they are not purely ceremonial, and people still are like, oh yeah, but surely they can't be used because they're too fragile. Or surely this. So that's very frustrating. Mm-hmm. And it's also kind of frustrating doing the research because it takes such a long time. Mm-hmm. I can sit in museums with a microscope for hours and days and days and days and days. Mm. And it would be really wonderful to halve that and just do something really quickly. But I mean, that's the nature of the research. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and like you said, technology will advance, and then hopefully you won't have to sit for hours and hours and hours and hours, and you'll get this information quickly, soon.
Yeah, we'll see.
Wouldn't it be great to be able to just scan it? Like, you just scan the object and it's like, yes, here are all these patches of Useware. This is, you know, this kind of trace. That would be lovely. Like,
yeah, although, you know, I actually had a conversation with an archaeologist yesterday about 3D scanning and whether you could use it for Useware analysis. And I actually think that with maybe not now, but we're not very far away from being able to use things like RTR and 3D scanning to replicate a surface digitally.
That
would be amazing.
That would be very cool.
Like, one day we'll be able to do that, I'm sure.
Although then we'll be out of a job, Amber. I mean, so.
Nah,
it'll probably be too expensive, so they'll have to employ us.
So you say that, you know, we've talked a bit about your kind of archaeological background, but of course we here are not just doing archaeology, we're doing an archaeology of fiction, specifically fantasy fiction. So first of all, do you enjoy reading? And second of all, do you enjoy reading fantasy?
Yes, both.
Oh, excellent.
Well, I love to read, I mean, not just, various different genres in books, but fantasy is probably one of my top ones. I love to read anything that draws me into a different world. And yeah, I mean, fantasy is brilliant for that.
Are there any particular favourite books or series?
Yeah, there's a series by an author called Maggie Fury. It's called The Artifacts of Power, which actually the title's quite relevant to my research. And it's about this mage called Orion, and there are four books, and they follow her life and how she's like this young, very powerful female mage, and she's struggling against evil, and she has to search for these artifacts of power to basically save the world.
Which is what you're doing in your research. Oh, that sounds very cool. I've never heard of these. Have you heard of them, Ash?
I think I have, but I have never read them.
I recommend them.
They do sound like classic fantasy, like proper magic, sorcery, world-saving.
Yeah. Like, they're like late 80s, early 90s publications.
Well, this is what I was thinking, have you read the Axis trilogy by Sarah Douglas, starting with Battle Axe?
Oh, you know, I haven't. I should do that. That's very appropriate for me.
Axes are everywhere.
You could include so many quotes in your papers.
Maybe that'll be like a really good paper title.
Exactly. Battle Axe.
So, great to have you here, Amber. Now that you are here, maybe you can help us with the following situation. So, picture the scene. It's a rainy day outside, so the perfect day to start working through the many, many boxes of artifacts that have just been delivered from all the different excavations that are happening outside the city walls at the moment. Suddenly, there's a sharp rap at the door. And you open it to see two dwarves waiting on the doorstep, carrying between them a box that is really too small for two people to be carrying it, but they are both gripping it with determination. They inform you that they are representatives of the Buzzkardum Society of Dwarvish History, and they need some help with the classification of an item that was recently donated to them. They hand you the box, admittedly with some apparent reluctance, and you open it to see a gleaming polished stone axe. So do you think you'd be able to help us with this issue, Amber?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, perfect. Awesome. Well, then I think that calls for a cuppa. I'll just go and pop the cauldron on and we'll be right back.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Here you go, everyone. Some lovely chamomile and honey tea to get us, you know, properly cozy.
Oh, thanks, Tilly. I don't drink tea, but thank you.
It's okay. I've done it cold for you, of course, Ash.
Can I have a beer instead? I can't even have that.
That is very dwarf.
Anyway. Good. So I'm actually quite interested to learn more about these axes. But, Tilly, I know you said that it's a classic fantasy object, but how often does it actually appear in fantasy fiction?
You know what? Now that you say it, I'm trying to think. There's a lot of swords and daggers and all of those kind of things in fantasy, but there's very few, although you did mention that series talking about axes at the beginning. But I had a very brief look through the resource that you sent me last time about what I can't remember what it's called now, the Fantasy Encyclopedia.
Encyclopedia of Fantasy.
That's the one. And there's sort of not loads of examples. There's quite a few examples of axes, but in terms of fantasy fiction, there's actually not loads of examples. Usually they're sort of considered more of a functional weapon rather than having like special powers. So you have so many books about like the sword of, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's got some special thing that, you know, I mean, King Arthur's a classic, right? But axes are usually just sort of, oh, and he had a mighty axe, like a mighty weapon. So it's always associated with kind of very fierce warriors and sort of fierce characters and everything, which, yeah. So I don't know if either of you have had different experiences of that in your fictional adventures.
Well, I mean, you've kind of got different axes and it depends on the category of character, doesn't it? Because often when I think of axes, I think obviously dwarves and axes and Gimli. And then I think of like berserkers as well. Yeah. The kind of, you know, Norse Viking-esque character that they often have that is easily to anger. And they often have a big axe or they have throwing axes.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. You see that a lot in fantasy. But I can't actually think of a lot of many like fantasy protagonists, I suppose, that wield axes, other than the series that I talked about before by Sarah Douglas. And I think there's another one that I've read a few years ago called The Sky and the Deep, and that's based on kind of Norse. They characterize it as Viking, which always annoys me. And that has wielding axes in it. And that's like the first time I've really seen it in a more... And she's not a shield maiden, neither the main character.
Woohoo!
Oh my God.
Wow. Can a Viking woman not be a shield maiden? Is that possible?
Apparently not. It's like the Lagertha complex or something, right. I swear. Like, as soon as they've seen that, they're like, no. So, yeah, I often see it with dwarves, usually, different kind of fantasy races and stuff. So what about you, Amber? Do you have any particular axe favourite fantasies?
I mean, really, I only find axes coming up in, like you said, dwarfs. It's usually dwarfs. And in those contexts, they are like an extension of their hand. And treated a little bit like swords are for everybody else. Yeah.
So you rarely see a dwarf with a sword.
Yeah, that's a rare thing.
Yeah, that is a rare thing. A dagger? Do you think they would have a dagger?
Probably some kind of dagger. I'm trying to think.
Small dagger.
What Gimli has in his repertoire. I think he does have some kind of little dagger that he brings out occasionally.
Yeah, but his axe is very special to him, isn't it? That's really important. And that's very different to everybody else. They use very different objects and weapons.
Yeah, which I guess the sort of the idea with specific to dwarves of it being like axes are very relevant to dwarves is because it comes from like they were originally mining tools and then it kind of developed from there because dwarves are associated with mining and stonework and kind of hitting things, I guess, and all that kind of stuff. And so you have then also when I was reading up about this, I found some other things. So for example, in Lord of the Rings, the kind of assumption is that there's dwarves and the axe, and then dwarves hate elves and elves love trees and axes chop down trees. So that's why dwarves like having axes. And that's one of the theories that I found. And guess, Ash, what other, you know, fantasy series features dwarves and axes?
Oh, I don't know if I've heard about that, actually. Is it Discworld?
It is Discworld.
Oh, my God. Wow. I never would have guessed that, you know.
Which, what I do like about that one is that they have the dwarves and they have axes. Instead of dwarves and elves being arch enemies, it's dwarves and trolls being arch enemies.
All right.
In that one. But you have a kind of ongoing thing about dwarf emancipation, because in Discworld, all dwarves are male. But they're not, obviously, but they all refer to themselves as male. So every dwarf is a he. But then in one of the books, you have a new character and suddenly it's a she. She refers to herself as she. And it's like this whole big thing in the whole of Dwarfish Kingdom. But anyway, and then that becomes a whole thing throughout it. And so it's then like dwarfish women want to still have their battle axes and their big axes, but they make them like jewel encrusted, or, you know, they make them pink, or, you know, something like that. But it's still, axes are still seen as kind of the ultimate dwarfish weapon, which I think, yeah, in pretty much every fantasy thing, if you have dwarves, you'll have axes.
Yeah, they're like, and like they're entangled so much with the person that wields them, aren't they? They're the symbol of the culture, the people, and everything, the history. So that's very interesting when we're talking about, you know, axe lifeways.
Yeah.
And, you know, object agency and stuff. So yeah, it's very, very interesting that it all connects.
And Amber, do you have any, and seeing as you've sort of been studying axes for longer, in terms of kind of mythology from archaeology, because I guess that's where a lot of fantasy comes from, what would you say are kind of the big axe wielding cultures or the sort of axe wielding myths of our time?
I think ideas about axes tend to come from Norse axes, Viking axes, and they're the ones that are called battle axes, and there's lots of contemporary mythology about the use of different axes, and you know, an axe isn't that far away from Thor's hammer in terms of, I mean, it's just a blunt axe, right?
Yeah,
maybe I might upset a few people by saying that.
Absolutely going crazy.
But and I think we actually see this reflected on interpretations of prehistoric stone axes, you know. We have a Neolithic and early Bronze Age stone battle axe, and they have the name battle axe, and that comes from somewhere. And the idea that the people who are buried with these axes are warriors and they're high status. And this reflects a lot of interpretations of axes later in history.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's quite interesting how it kind of influences fantasy and then back again and everything.
So could it have been then that if people hadn't thought that axes were always associated with battle and ritual and everything, that actually all fantasy would have been really different? Like if they hadn't, you know, you were saying that there's the stereotype that, you know, historic and prehistoric axes were used as ritual or sort of ceremonial, and if you're buried with them, you're a great warrior or a king or whatever. If that stereotype hadn't been around, if instead people were like, oh, so he was clearly a great woodcutter, then Gimli would have been a very different character. Like, do you know what I mean? Fantasy development would have been really different, which is an interesting thought experiment, I guess.
Doesn't Loki, the god, have an axe?
Does he have an axe?
To kill the rooster that sits upon Yggdrasil.
Oh, you know more about the mythology than me, I think. I'm not
very good at it. But no, I'm sure he has an axe, because the name was corrupted over time. And then in the 1700s, the name changed to Leviathan or something like that.
Ooh.
But the Hayaton or something like that, this axe that it was basically like a twig, essentially,
<Right. laughs>
that was meant to cut down the main golden rooster that sat on the three golden roosters that sat on Yggdrasil to bring about Ragnarok or something.
Oh. But
the name is meant to be like cunning. So it's like the opposite of what we think of axes. We think of battle axes and like blood and terror,
brute force,
and
yeah.
But actually, yeah, this is quite a wielding kind of cunning weapon that you would have. I don't know, but I remember something. Norse myth.
And you also do have, I think, a lot of fantasy where there's usually a character who's not necessarily a great warrior or, you know, something, and they kind of at some point have to, you know, take up an axe, and that's sort of the metaphor of them finding their strength. And, you know, like, and everyone always laughs because they're like, oh, you silly little girl with your axe, you know, how's that going to help you or whatever? And then she whirls it around and kills them or something. But I don't know. I'm trying to think. I swear there's some fantasy that features something like that.
I mean, there's that kind of strength thing, isn't it? You need to be a certain body type and you need to, but then it kind of, it's meant to, you're meant to, it's like the underdog.
Yeah, exactly.
Similar to our Dark Lord sort of thing. The underdog always wins and always prevails.
Yeah.
Through that wielding of the weapon.
Yeah.
Scary big weapon.
Yeah, you also find people, say if everyone gets called to war or a fight and they're not soldiers and they have to grab their own weapons. But what do you grab? You get what you have at home. Sometimes that's an axe.
Yeah.
You'd be chopping wood, wouldn't you? You'd be, that's what you'd have. So definitely.
Which, that also features quite a lot, right? In underdog things, or in not even just fantasy, but things, and people are going, yeah, but we don't have any weapons. And, you know, you look around, it's like axes and plows and hoes and all these things are sort of classic farmer tools. And they, it's how you perceive it.
And if you think about it as well, I'm just thinking of my own partner and how he comes from a crofting background, and mostly they're very sturdy people, and they do have to wield axes, and they have to, so you get this kind of characterization probably from that there's a farm boy who's got that kind of strength, because he's been throwing bales around and things, and then you get and then he's like, well, I'll take up my axes, and he's got double wielding cool axes, I can imagine that happening a lot in fantasy.
It makes it quite a transformative object. You can become something else by suddenly using it in a different way.
Yeah.
I like that. That's very cool. Yeah.
That's proper object agency right there. That is. you are influenced by the axe. If you hold an axe, people look at you a lot more differently than if you're holding like a feather duster.
Oh my God. That's why, like, personally, right? I've got two axes. I mean, I've mentioned this to Tilly before. One is not really an axe because it's a tomahawk, but still. And my friend gave me that because he said women should always have an axe in the house. Which I thought was interesting. Yeah. And then I also, my partner bought me another one, but it's for cutting pizza because
They look great.
Yeah. And it's got like runes on it and everything. It's like probably like decorated. And he was like, you'll feel better with this tiny little hand cutting pizza. It's great. It's the best thing I've ever bought, really. So. And I do. I feel like a Viking every single time. Like, yes,
there you go.
This pizza.
See, it's giving you purpose. It's giving you that feeling of strength, and
Yeah. There you go. And if there's like a burglar, that will do some damage. Right. So.
Heaven forbid any burglar ever try to burgle an archaeologist's house, because we have all kinds of random things lying around the place.
Oh yeah.
I have a lot of heavy stone.
Yeah, but you do.
Heavy bladed stone, I think you called it.
Yeah.
Do you have
many
a lot
things
of
things that can cause a lot of cranial damage?
Do you have any personal private axes around your house, Amber?
I have six axes that I use in experiments for my PhD.
Oh.
They're currently not in my house, they're sat next to me in my office.
Okay.
They range in location depending on where I want them.
You're trying to impress.
Well, I also have quite a collection of random rocks that I pick up all over the place.
Oh yeah, that's nice.
Getting a bit of a rock hoarder.
The problem is with those sort of collections is that you have them. I remember we used to have one. We used to do it every time we went hiking. We'd pick up a rock at the top of the hill and then bring it back down with us again. But then you amass this collection of stones. And like you say, they're just heavy rocks, which then you have. When we moved house, we had a box and my friend was lifting. She's like, God, what's in here? I was like, wooden rocks. What?
Yeah. I have a really cool flint core. And it's like
a
grey white as well.
Oh, that's
cool. And it's definitely been worked. And I just found it and I was like, yes, love it. So yeah, that was a good find for me.
Yeah, very nice. Oh, hang on. That's another knock at the door. Oh, looking through the window, I think I can see. Oh, it's that delivery of, speaking of wood, it's that delivery of ancient wooden chests that we'd ordered, Ash.
Oh, God, that's absolutely typical, that. They were supposed to deliver those yesterday, and I waited 5 hours in the house waiting for these bloody delivery to arrive, and they didn't.
Well, we better make the most of them finally being here then. So we'll just quickly cut short this episode of Am I Trowel, but don't worry, we'll be continuing our chat with Amber all about axes in our next episode with part 2. In the meantime, we're always looking for new episode ideas. So if you have any suggestions, do get in contact via email or social media. All of our contact information, plus all that we've been talking about today, can be found in the show notes. Bye.
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 This episode was produced by Chris Webster from his RV traveling the United States, Tristan Boyle in Scotland, DigTech LLC, Cultural Media, and the Archaeology Podcast Network, and was edited by Rachel Roden.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.